independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Jared Carrabas, the tribal chief of baseball, covers the MLB for DraftKings, is our guest. Jared, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. I think I can speak to the entire city of Houston, Jared, when we say that we really appreciate your Twitter account and your demeanor towards the New York Yankees.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this used to be a once proud franchise where, you know, they used to be the big bad Yankees, and I think we've kind of tag teamed here a little bit. The Houston Astros, the Boston Red Sox, they've accounted for what, like 65% of the eliminations that the Yankees have had over the last decade. So it's been nice.
Jared, with that as a follow-up, I mean, you look at what's happened with the Yankees and what the once proud franchise, which was a long, long time ago. Aaron Judge, Red Sox, Giants, is there any legit chance he goes somewhere else? And then what happens with Boone and or with Cashman? Do you see their futures staying in New York, or do you see changes made?
So I think the Judge sweepstakes are going to be fascinating because you've already got the Dodgers. The day after the Yankee season ended, you had a report come out about the Dodgers who want to go all in on Judge and have Mookie Betts move back to second base. And then yesterday, there was a report that the Giants are going to be the top bidder for Aaron Judge, and that they'll guarantee that, but no mention of the Mets. And I think that if you're Steve Cohen and you won 101 games, you blew that division lead, and then you get embarrassed in the wild card round, you have to make a splash. And I don't know that there's a bigger splash to make than Aaron Judge. And I'm not saying that that's where he's going to go, but there's been a lot of talk about the Giants and the Dodgers and a potential return to the Yankees, but I'm not going to sit here and say that the Mets are some sort of, you know, sleeper team. Like, I feel like they should be right there at the top, and I don't know why the Giants are so confident that they can outbid the Mets. If you were to ask me which team is going to have the best offer in terms of financial compensation, I still think that it's the Mets, even if it's if, like with the report about the Giants. So I'm very intrigued to see how it goes. There was a report that actually just came out, I don't know, less than an hour ago, and there were a bunch of anonymous Yankee players that were cited in it being like, yeah, like, we don't even want to be Yankees anymore. Like, it's hard to play at home. Like, it's like the Yankee fans make it difficult to play here. I actually was told the same thing during the season. Like, that report basically says that, you know, that's how the players felt during the ALCS specifically, but I was told that during the season, where it's like, yeah, like it's very hard to come to Yankee Stadium and just get booed by your own fans. And then, you know, for the other players who necessarily weren't getting booed, but see a guy like Aaron Judge getting booed, and then you have other options. Like, if you're Aaron Judge, and money's money. I mean, obviously, once you're talking about the hundreds of millions of dollars, then you're looking at where can I go where taxes aren't going to take as much away from me as another destination. I don't know. You're basically asking yourself the question, how much does legacy mean to me? Or do I want to start my legacy or build my legacy somewhere else? This is not a guy that has won multiple championships with the Yankees, and how could he ever leave? He hasn't even won one championship there. So outside of being a recognizable name and breaking Roger Maris's record, what type of legacy are we really talking about having to continue to build in New York? Like, if I'm him, I'm very much intrigued to go out to the West Coast, link up with the Dodgers, go to the Giants. He's going to have his options, and I don't know that the Yankees are going to be the number one priority for him, especially since he's probably still bitter about how things ended going into spring training, where, you know, they made him an offer. He didn't quite like it, and he bet on himself and had one of the greatest seasons that we've ever seen. So, but, you know, to the second part of the question about Cashman and Boone, we saw yesterday that there was a report that they're going to retain both of those guys. I always thought that Aaron Boone's job should be safe. I think that he's the right voice for that clubhouse. I think that he's one of those managers in the game right now where there's different styles of managers that we see in the game. And, you know, I like his approach to managing, at least from a leadership perspective, from a relationship building perspective. I think that he is, I think he's the guy who lead that team. I don't think that I was in the camp of letting go of Brian Cashman. I think he has a job for life, really. But I think if you were going to blame any one person, not that it is any one person's fault why the Yankees got swept by the Astros, I think it starts at the top. I mean, you look at roster construction. It's not Brian Cashman's fault that Aroldis Chapman, you know, did what he did and left, and they had some injuries in their bullpen. But I don't think any of that really makes a difference. Like, you could point to the IKF addition, the Josh Donaldson trade, not having G. Urshela. There's plenty of things that you could point to. But at the end of the day, that is excuse making. And we saw a lot of it with this Yankees team. And at some point, you just have to tip your cap and acknowledge that the Houston Astros were the better team across the board. It's not even a matter of, oh, they were the better team in this series. They outplayed us X, Y, Z. They're constructed overall for the entire duration of the year. They were a better team than you. They are a better team than you, and that's why you lost.
Jared Carabas joining us on the HRMP guest line, covers MLB for DraftKings. Jared, you were on with us towards the end of the regular season, and we were looking ahead to the postseason, and you said to us that Jeremy Peña could have a breakout postseason. Had a good DS against Seattle, and then, of course, was the ALCS MVP. What did you see in him that gave you confidence he would have a big postseason, and then what did you see with him in the postseason?
You said the word, confidence. This is a kid that he believes in his ability. And I remember when we had the discussion, it was like, you know, Julio Rodriguez is a player that, you know, he's going to run away with the American League Rookie of the Year award. But Jeremy Peña, like, he got sidetracked at points this season. So I think if both players stayed healthy and they played the same amount of games, we would have had a much closer race. But I think when you're asked to come in and replace a guy like Carlos Correa immediately. And it's not even like you're being asked to replace Carlos Correa during a rebuild. You're being substituted for Carlos Correa in the middle of a dynasty. And for him to come in with those expectations, knowing who once played that position right before you, and him to perform the way that he did during the regular season, Houston is, I'm not going to say it's a difficult place to play. I think they love their players there. It's a great fan base. They're super passionate. I think, you know, they're very encouraging. Come into that environment and deliver immediately with those expectations, with that lineage behind you. That tells you all you need to know about his makeup going into the postseason. I mean, hey, the outside noise, that's not going to impact my game. So if you look at the player's abilities, and he's not impacted by outside factors, that's a guy that you have a pretty good feeling is going to be able to shine in October. He had the home run to clinch in Seattle. He's the ALCS MVP. And I don't think that it stops there. I think that that's just a guy that, you know, you plug and play. And it's not a great comparison, but Bryce Harper for the Phillies is playing up to the moment. Bryce Harper is an MVP type caliber player. He has two MVPs in the regular season. I don't think that we're quite there with Peña yet in terms of talking MVP for the whole regular season. But you can see Bryce Harper is playing up to the moment. I think Jeremy Peña is doing the exact same thing. He is playing up to the moment.
All right, Jared, we've had this conversation. There's an article that just came out. And let's also be clear, they had a guy that's not even on the playoff roster in the top 30, but The question was, who's the best player in the World Series? And their conclusion was Bryce Harper. We've had the argument of Yordan Alvarez in the conversation. What says you?
Ooh. I guess it depends on how you look at it, because Bryce Harper has the ligament tear in the elbow, so he's not playing defense. Yordan Alvarez is playing defense, but he's not exactly a great defender. So let's just look at them both as designated hitters. I think you go Bryce Harper there, but I think that's more so because Yordan had somewhat of a quiet ALCS. He did have that walk-off homer in game one against Seattle. It depends on what factors you're weighing. Like pedigree, you go Bryce Harper there. He's played in the postseason before, as has Jordan, and he's had success. He basically single-handedly eliminated the Red Sox last year. It's very close. I don't think that you could pick Jordan and sound stupid, but in terms of the full scope, if we're going the entire postseason, if we're going entire postseason careers, it's a very tiny slight edge to Bryce Harper.
Jared, have you made a prediction yet?
I have not officially made a prediction. But I think I am going to go Astros. I don't know how many games yet. We're probably going to break that down on the podcast. But I've seen people make the argument for, and so what I've said is about this seven game format, 2-3-2. We just saw it in the NLCS. If you split those first two games, now the Phillies have three straight games at home, so you have a nice little runway to get some traction. And if you take two out of three at home, you have to go back to Houston and maybe win game six or seven there, because they're hot right now. They've got that team of destiny vibe to them. But then I just go back to the 2007 World Series when the Colorado Rockies won 21 out of 23 and then just bulldozed their way to the World Series. I don't think they lost a game going into the World Series. And then the Red Sox just snuffed them out in four games because they were that good and the Rockies were the Rockies. I don't think the Astros are going to snuff out the Phillies, but they are that much better than them. So I think I'll probably end up landing on Astros in six.
Jared, we always appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the World Series.
Thank you, guys.
Jared Carrabas, the tribal chief of baseball, covers the MLB for DraftKings. The confidence for Pena. Who deserves credit for that? And also, he brought up Rocktober. I think that there are parallels between that World Series that he was talking about and this World Series coming up on Friday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jared Carrabas, I'll be honest with you, I love Jared Carrabas. I love that he's the tribal chief of baseball. I love what the insight he brings to us. I'm getting tired of people calling the Phillies a team of destiny. Like, he just mentions Team of Destiny after we had a huge conversation about Team of Destiny yesterday. Balza, of all people, who is not even a baseball guy, calls the Phillies a Team of Destiny. I'm annoyed. I'm sick and tired of hearing about how the Phillies are this Team of Destiny because they underachieved in the regular season. They fired their manager. Bryce Harper was hurt for a good chunk of season, and now that's what makes them a Team of Destiny?
Jeremy,
it annoys me. It annoys me.
Jeremy, you know I'm on your side.
Yeah.
But the Phillies do fit what is traditionally called the Team of Destiny.
Because they underachieved the entire regular season. They're now a Team of Destiny.
You take a bigger issue with the way we use the phrase than you do with this particular instance.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
Rachel, who does the show for us on the weekends, her and Holly, she was listening to the show yesterday, mm-hmm. and she heard the segment that we did about Teams of Destiny. And the thing that I look for a Team of Destiny is when a team wins a series, wins the finals, wins the Super Bowl, whatever, after something tragic has happened or something, like there's something to a story, or it's just Sister Jean sitting on the end of the bench, right? Like there's something almost magical. There's something bigger than the game that is involved, in my opinion, of a Team of Destiny. So I went in and looked at some of them. We mentioned the Astros in 17 after Hurricane Harvey as a Team of Destiny when they had something that seemed bigger than the game that almost was a huge storyline for that team's season. I looked at some other places where this has happened. The Saints always come up. The Saints ended up winning after Katrina like a few years afterwards, but it was almost like the buildup with the city. The city getting back on
its
feet.
There's no doubt
that was
the Saints
eventually winning the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I didn't realize this one until I looked it up yesterday. The Red Sox after the Boston bombing. That was a huge one. And then like there's some other significant games along the way, like the Brett Favre when he loses his dad. There was, what was it, four touchdowns, Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
We Are Marshall plane crash, and then they win their very next football game. That's what I look at as Team of Destiny. Not because their star was hurt half the year. They fired their manager. They underachieved during the regular season. I don't know how that makes them a team of destiny. And maybe my definition is just different than everybody else's.
And, you know, and we tried to break it down, but I think everybody's interpretation is going to be different based on their sports lifetime of what they've experienced and seen and witnessed and what they think should or has to go into it. But I think I understand why a lot of people are using that D word that flippantly because, like I said, if you just look at the fast stats and say last team to get in and for the playoffs is the last team standing in the National League, and now they've got a puncher's chance in the World Series, if they win it all, it's a pretty Cinderella-esque story, but is there a difference between Cinderella story and Team of Destiny?
Right. I think you had those conversations. Anyways, what he talked about Rocktober, which I was reading something on The Athletic today where they were talking about this because the Rockies had that magical ride getting to the World Series, and I think they were swept by the Red
Sox.
They were.
After they ran the table to get there, they were run out of town in four straight.
We talked about yesterday, too, the break between the end of both league championship series and the World Series is going to be 4 days whenever it's all said and done. And we talked about, like, who has the advantage here. One thing that I failed to articulate the way that I wanted to articulate it is that a lot of times when you have a team that maybe is a team of destiny, no one expects them to get there. So you're riding this wave of momentum for a very long time. You can, like the Rockets streak that they had in the regular season that 1 year, and they went 20-something games in a row. Like a lot of times you ride this momentum and you're almost delirious, right? Where you're just delirious, but you're riding on momentum. You're keeping it going. Adrenaline's playing its thing and doing its part. But then the moment that you rest for a second, it's gone. Like it's
that's
completely
why I like these
gone.
4 days off for the Phillies.
Yeah, because I think that they've been riding this wave of momentum, that like Rocktober, where you're just playing every single day. You're working on adrenaline. You're kind of delirious, but you're just so red hot, you can't do anything wrong. But the moment you lay your head to pillow, it's all gone, and you rest.
We were talking about
rest
yesterday,
for a while.
And I said it's kind of like when we always say when you're a hot hitter and you're scheduled for a day off, the last thing you want to do is sit down and have Dusty or someone sit you down because you want to ride that wave. I felt that exact same thing. That's why when we were talking yesterday about who benefits more, we had the Todd Callis sound about who benefits more from having to wait until Friday to play the game. And I said twofold, but the first fold was the fact that the Phillies, who don't want to have a day off or 2 days off or not play a game every single day when they're playing as well as they're playing, have to sit for four. Yep. And on the flip side, from an Astros perspective, a guy that's struggling as much as Altuve can kind of just get his mind right, relax a little bit, and come in, clean the slate, and go, I can start from scratch in the World Series and rewrite my legacy for this year.
See, I think Jose Altuve you can use as an example of that, like that player riding on all the momentum, and then the moment he rests, it's gone. Because Jose Altuve finished the season on an unbelievable tear. He went 3-for-3 final day to get his batting average up to 300, rest for a little bit after riding that momentum, and then he's lost. He's gone. Mm-hmm. We've seen some signs of him coming back. I could see that playing out here in the World Series. At least I'm hopeful of that playing out in the World Series. And you're probably saying, well, why can't you use that same logic with the Houston Astros? Two things. One, like what Callis said, the Astros did this earlier in the postseason where they sat for 5 days, end of regular season, start of the postseason. Secondly, I don't see what the Astros did in the playoffs as exceeding what they did in the regular season. I think they've played to who they are. In fact, Yordan didn't have a good ALCS. Altuve was not the player he was in the regular season. Kyle Tucker was not the player who was in the regular season. The pitching,
Trey Mancini.
The pitching that you've gotten to like has been on par with what you saw for the Astros all regular season. Whereas if you look for the Phillies, I think that they've played above their heads. I think they've exceeded what they have done in the regular season. So like, if there's going to be a team that comes back down to earth, is it the team that exceeded expectations so far in the playoffs versus regular season, or is it the team that's been the same old train plugging along the whole way?
I know it's hard to say this, and it's not by a significant amount. I think you could make the case the Astros have actually slightly underproduced who they were.
I would say offensively for sure.
The thing is,
about the guys who've been responsible for the runs, and it hasn't been your core guys.
Well, and that's why I hesitate to say it a little bit, because you got some production from guys you didn't expect it from.
Chaz.
But even when I look at the pitching, like, I don't think in the regular season you had 2 out of 7 starts where the starters looked as bad as McCullers and Verlander did.
Right.
So as a whole, it's not by much.
Sure.
But I think you could make the case they've slightly underperformed.
I think offensively I would agree with that. I could see what you're saying from a starting pitching perspective as well. If there's one area that overperformed, it's probably the bullpen. Even though the bullpen was the best bullpen in the entire league during the regular season, they've actually taken it up a notch. Now, some of that's probably because you're just using your higher leverage guys and you don't have, a spot 4 innings from Brandon Belak or a Seth Martinez. You're trying to figure out Will Smith. Smith. A lot of it has to do that you're just playing your dudes. You're just playing your leverage dudes instead of all your minus dudes. So I think that plays as well. One quick thing about the Jeremy Peña thing. He talked about how he sees so much confidence. And I know we've talked about this before. To me, the biggest reason that Jeremy Peña has confidence is because of Dusty Baker. Moving him to the two spot, getting him going, is something that an analytical manager would never do. I'm not putting a 280 on base percentage in the two hole. I would get fired for that. But Dusty does that because Dusty has some little Dusty dust, some old school tricks. It got him going. Here he is playing well in October. I don't think that happens if Jeremy Peña is in the 7 or 8 spot all year long.
I think it's a combination, too. I think you're right, but I think it's also a Jose Altuve. A Jose Altuve who was best friends with Carlos Correa, who a lot of people were saying, what's he going to do without him? And instead, he's embraced the kid, and both offensively and defensively. He's gotten behind him. He's supported him. He's basically said time and time again, you know, if you ask me to talk about him, we can go on for 2 hours because of how much I think of him. And I think that when you're playing next to a guy that has that kind of a legacy behind him, that, like you said, might be the greatest Astro of all time, and he is in your corner at all times, that means so much to feeling comfortable, feeling like the whole weight's not on your shoulders, like not having to compare yourself to Carlos Correa every day because the guys in the locker room are saying, we got you, man. Just be you. And that is a massive deal. He mentioned how much Dusty has meant to him. But I think also along those lines, it's Altuve and the veterans, Bregman on either side of him saying, hey, we got you. You're back every day. Just go out and do what you do.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go to the HRMP listener line. Chuck, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Chuck?
What's going on, fellas? Love to talk to y'all, man. I just want to tell you I can't agree with you more on the fact that I think the Phillies are going to be in for kind of a letdown after these 5 days off because they have been riding that high. And I'll be honest with you, they're going to hear a lot of press telling them, just like y'all said, oh, they got a puncher's chance. Well, I mean, you know, never has a team been 19 games fewer than the team that they're about to play ever be considered a puncher's chance. I think we're just setting it up. We're going to have a really good time, and I think we faced them right at the end of the season, so we got some film on them a little more than we've had the last two times we played the Nationals and the Braves. Just want to hear what y'all got to say about that.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to hear from you, buddy.
They're better than 87 wins. So I hate talking about the margin of record, and I know that it's like one of the greatest gaps in World Series history. I hate even bringing that up because the Phillies are better than an 87-win team. They had Joe Girardi that managed them out of the gates, and they were doing poorly. Bryce Harper's been hurt for a good chunk of the years, missed almost half the season. They're way better than 87 wins. As far as the puncher's chance, Phillies have a way better than a puncher's chance to win this. This isn't Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson.
Nope.
These are two. This is 19 World Series. This is Astros Nationals. Nationals won that series in 7. The Phillies are more than capable of beating the Astros. They ain't Buster Douglas.
And as it relates to the last series of the regular season, you got to understand they basically played all their reserves the day after they clinched because they were all hammered and they were hung over. And so that was a start that Verlander had where he threw no-hit baseball for like 5 innings, which would have been great if it was, you know, the teeth of their order. And maybe in retrospect, you're glad it wasn't because of the fact that Verlander is better when he has not been seen by a majority of the lineup because he's got filthy stuff, but, you know, he also has tendencies. So I think that you didn't see the best Phillies once they clinched. You did see some of the best Phillies, but I don't think that's going to be, you know, one way or another in terms of how it relates to the World Series. To me, the advantage was Verlander didn't face the majority of the big hitters that are in their lineup so that he can go out where good pitching beats good hitting, and they haven't seen him personally to know what his stuff does.
Yeah, Nola shoved against the Astros in game one that clinched him. 6 2/3 of shutout baseball. Wheeler did not pitch in that series, but you got to see some of the bullpen arms too. I don't really think there's an advantage there either way. Whenever you look back at that series, like the Astros, did they get a little familiar with the Phillies? Sure. Mm-hmm. Did the Phillies get a little familiar with the Astros? Sure.
Yeah, the only thing you can say from both perspectives is if hitters got to see pitchers firsthand, that does have an impact on hitters.
They saw Astros pitching too, though.
Sure, exactly.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Brandon Cooks has quit on the Texans, and what is the least amount that you would receive for Brandon Cooks in a trade? What is the least amount that you would take? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Brandon Cooks has quit on the Houston Texans. He's quit on them. His play this year?
No.
First time? But nope. When did he quit on them before?
When he got mad about Mark Ingram, and then they had to kind of clear it all up and have the come to, I don't want to say come to Jesus because Easterby's gone. But
he had the tweet where it didn't seem he was happy about the Mark Ingram trade, but he played. He didn't miss games, and he was productive last year.
There's different ways of quitting.
Yeah. This year, I don't think he's had a very good season. It's to me, he seemed disinterested all year long. We've seen drops from Brandon Cooks all year long. One of the Davis Mills had a game earlier this season where he threw, I believe, would have been a game go-ahead touchdown late in the game to Brandon Cooks, and he flat-out dropped it at the goal line. Wasn't a great throw, but it's a throw that a receiver of Brandon Cooks' caliber makes 10 times out of 10. There was a play earlier this year where Davis Mills threw an interception. While the dude that intercepted the football was running the other way, Brandon Cooks threw his hands up in the air, walked off the field towards the sideline. One of the other things with Brandon Cooks, his name has come up recently in these trade rumors, and Brandon Cooks isn't somebody who likes a lot of comments on Twitter. If you go look at Brandon Cooks' likes on Twitter, some of the things that he's liked recently are like a Grambling State football game back on September 17th. He liked something else on October 12th. He liked another thing on October 18th, which, by the way, said this. Brandon Cooks, he goes stale if not on a new team after 2 years, plus Nico Collins is the future if Houston has one. Was not added, so that means that he is searching his name on Twitter to see what people are saying about him. And then his most recent two tweets that he liked were tweets that mentioned his name as a possible trade target coming up with the trade deadline coming up on Tuesday, November 1st. On top of that, last week when Brandon Cooks spoke, he was defending the honor of Jack Easterby after he was fired. On top of that, Brandon Cooks today, his normal media availability day, is today. He was scheduled to talk today. I get the Houston Texans emails. And if you go to YouTube, the Houston Texans YouTube channel, where they post said press conference videos, it says Houston Texans Lovie Smith, Davis Mills, and Brandon Cooks meet with the media after practice. Brandon Cooks' picture is on the little, you know, preview picture before you click on the video on YouTube. Jonathan Alexander tweeted this. Per a spokesperson, Texans receiver Brandon Cooks has a lift right now, so he won't be at the podium talking with media during his regularly scheduled time today. Brandon Cooks
has a weightlifting session? Is that what they're saying?
I'm assuming a lift means, yeah, he's doing some benches and some squats and things like that, which would be very easy to go to a media thing for 10 minutes and then hit your lift afterwards.
I mean, look, For a lot of reasons, and Easterby was his guy, and Easterby was his guy previously in New England, and they talked about their relationship. They talked about culturally, even after he crapped all over the Texans when they traded away Mark Ingram, that, you know, a day later they were, you know, good to go because he and Jack and everybody worked it out. Now Jack's gone. He still got his back. And like you said, with the likes and what he's doing, he realizes this could be his last chance to get out of Dodge. He knows that. You know, as much as the season started with a lot of people saying he's an underrated wide receiver one that, you know, on a lot of other teams would be, you know, one of the better receivers in football. And you know what? And that's the kind of stuff, especially if he's searching his name, that, you know, gets him to think a certain way. And then when he gets Davis Mills that can't throw him the ball, and when he does, he can't catch it. And, you know, he realizes that the team is going nowhere and the chances for him to have a good season are too, that this is his possible last opportunity to finally hook up with another good team, good quarterback, to show his wares and actually win some football games. I think he's pushing the envelope.
Yeah, I think that he's pushing the envelope. I think he's on his way out of town. I think Brandon Cooks is going to be traded. The problem with this, though, is that, like, this behavior, and look, he's not acting like a diva receiver. I guess you can make the argument that he is. He's not acting like Antonio Brown. Like, his teams are still going to covet Brandon Cooks. I know Brandon Cooks has already been traded 3 times in his career, but part of that is because he's been coveted by other teams. He's a solid receiver in the NFL. I think he's been playing poorly this year, certainly well below the expectations everybody has for him, but you can see the signs that Brandon Cooks no longer wants to be a member of the Houston Texans. The problem, though, is that, look, other NFL teams know what he's liking on Twitter. Other NFL teams know that he's walking off the field during an interception. Other NFL teams knows that he wants out and he's not making his media session, things like that, media availability. The problem here for the Texans is not so much the idea or fear or what could you get for Brandon Cooks in terms of a trade. The issue that I have right now is you have a dude who's supposed to be professional, right? That's why they love Brandon Cooks, who is diminishing his trade value. And that's not a good thing from a Houston Texans perspective.
It's not from a good thing from a Texans perspective. It's a good thing. It's fine for him because he has enough relationships in the league that a lot of people that know him or know what he's doing right now and what's going on can talk to their people and say, hey, he's cool. He's good. There's nothing physically wrong with this guy, and this guy is just basically making a business decision right now because he knows he's in a no-win for either him or the team. But you're right. As it relates to the Texans, this is not a good situation because you're talking about a guy that a year ago, when it looked like they were absolutely trying to clear house and get rid of, have a yard sale for everybody that had value, you could have gotten something you would think substantial. It wouldn't have been a first-round pick, but it could have been close. And if you
could
got
have been more than what it would be now.
Right. And if you could have gotten multiple teams involved, you could have maybe pumped that price up a little bit. Now it looks like, and based on conversations we had leading up to the show with Lance, it looks like it's a whole different market no matter what we might have thought a day or two ago. Because ironically, on Monday, you and I brought this up. On Tuesday, ESPN said he's the most tradable guy that could go before the trade deadline. And now here we are on Wednesday finding out that it's not, we were discussing a second or a third. And we're finding out the market might be a whole lot less, and that might be something that's going to disappoint a whole lot of the fan base.
Not only did the Texans not trade Brandon Cooks, because I think that there's two parts to this story. Like, there's more than just not electing to trade Brandon Cooks. And something that I always point to as well is, like, the variable of trading somebody, you also, it depends on what you get. Like, last year at the trade deadline, whatever, I'm not trading Brandon Cooks for a seventh round
draft. Don't make a trade to make a trade. Make a trade where at least you benefit in some way.
But if you are in that camp that you should have traded Brandon Cooks for the best that you can, and basically you're calling every single team and you're finding out what the best offer is out there and what the market says Brandon Cooks is, and you think that you need to trade him to whatever the best offer is, maybe it would have been a fourth at the time. Who knows? But to compound that, Nick Caserio signed him to an extension.
Yep.
So not only did he elect to not trade him, Nick Caserio also elected to sign Brandon Cooks to an extension that has a dead cap figure on the Texans. If they were to trade him, this is the dead cap that would be on it, a $43.5 million. So, like, the trade this year would cost the Texans significant money against the cap. Now, whatever, 2022, fine. It doesn't matter the cap hit because the Texans aren't in contention. You're not trying to build a really good team, all of that. Well, if you go to next season, his dead cap's still $34 million. So that's how much a piece of the pie would be still have Brandon Cooks. Even though you traded him, he would have a dead cap of $34 million.
Is he even tradable this year? I didn't realize how insane his dead cap was.
The cap now, the dead cap is it hurts the team that traded him.
Right.
The cap hit is what impacts the team that trades for him. His cap hit this year is actually pretty reasonable.
Right,
it's like $9.8 million.
But do the
cap hit next
year
is $26.5 million.
God, that's a lot of money.
They've asked Caserio recently, not specifically about Brandon Cooks, but they've talked about with Caserio, it was during the bye week when he had his little press conference, like, how are they with the salary cap? And Nick Caserio, these are his words, and I don't know if he was thinking about Brandon Cooks whenever he was delivering this message, but he says where they are right now with the cap is not going to prevent them or restrict them from doing anything that they want.
That's...
And you can also reconfigure right. deals before you trade them to make it easier, things like that. Now, not too much, but he still has a $34 million dead cap next year. The team that would be acquiring Brandon Cooks has taken a cap hit this year, like less than $10 million, not a huge number. But next year, $26.5
and
million.
And if they cut him, then...
Cut or trade.
See, so what I'm saying, so say it said team trades for him.
Right.
The Texans are on the hook for the dead cap.
Let's say the Packers.
Right, say the Packers, right? Because you know that I would say it anyway. And then the Packers, they're fine with the salary for this year.
Sure,
that's but at
fine.
The end of the year, they don't want to pay him $26 million. But if they cut him, then they have that dead cap on theirs as well?
$34 million.
Oh, boy. That changes everything.
Yeah. Now, it might be their cap hit, actually. I think it's the cap hit at that point. Because
the dead
Texans
cap
would
already paid.
The Texans would absorb the dead cap of 34. Now, they would still be on the books for the cap hit of $26 million. Okay. So that's still significant.
It is a big
It's not
jump.
34, but
right,
it is
that's
26.
That's a large sum of money.
So the finances are also in play when it comes to Brandon Cooks. The productivity of Brandon Cooks hasn't been there. I think the Texans receiver has quit on the Texans. What is the least that you would take back in a trade for Brandon Cooks? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Brandon Cooks is going to be very difficult to trade. The money is going to make it difficult. There's always ways to you know, convert some of the dead cat to signing bonus. It's either going to be very difficult to trade or it's going to be very expensive for Cool Cat McNair. We're asking you the question, what's the least you would take for Brandon Cooks at this point? Because I think that they did miss the opportunity to trade him for peak value last trade deadline. But then to make matters worse, they signed him to this two-year deal that's going to be either very expensive or make him impossible to trade. And I think it's fair to look at this from a Nick Caserio perspective because we're giving him pass-fail on all of these moves. Did he pass this one? Did he fail this one? Did he pass this one? Did he fail this one? Looking at Brandon Cooks, they haven't even traded Brandon Cooks yet. It is already a fail for Nick Caserio.
The extension is a killer, and it
absolutely
does. It falls on Caserio because it didn't need to be done. And I don't think that he was in a position of strength or had this knockout season or was going to do enough for you to believe that Davis Mills had to have him. Sure, it would have been nice. Yeah, that extension was not necessary, and that is a killer right now.
So we asked you the question, what is the least you would be willing to trade Brandon Cooks for? What is it for you? What is that answer for you?
A fourth or a fifth?
Man, I think I just talked myself into a sixth, if I'm being completely honest. Like, because, and a lot of people are going to be ticked off about that.
Right, but well, let's be honest from the start and take it back a notch. We were talking about it the other day, a second or a third. We brought it up to Lance before the show, and Lance said a sixth, and we both were like, whoa.
Oh, I saw on CBS today. CBS was putting together like a trade that every contender should make. And the trade that they had, because I've been, like, people have been talking about a second rounder for Brandon Cooks. I'm like, dude, James Robinson just got traded for a sixth. Like, certainly a second rounder. If Caserio was offered a second rounder last year, he would have traded Brandon Cooks for a second rounder. So I always thought the second rounder was outrageous. I thought a third rounder might have been pushing it too. So when I saw the CBS story where they were talking about trades for every contender, they basically had Brandon Cooks being traded to the Titans for a fifth rounder. They had him exchanging six rounders, whatever. But they had Brandon Cooks being traded to Tennessee for what basically amounted to a fifth round draft pick. So I was like, man, okay, that's not great. Whenever people are talking about pie in the sky second rounder, maybe even overly optimistic third rounder, but then for that jump to go all the way to a fifth, and the reason why, I think there's a lot of things at play here, a lot of actors at play. One is the things we were talking about, Brandon Cooks liking these tweets, diminishing his value to everybody else around the NFL because now the Texans don't have leverage, but also the contract situation. I think right now the Texans will be lucky to get a fifth round draft pick for Brandon Cooks, and I think if they do trade him, which I do believe that they will trade him, I don't think Brandon Cooks is going to be on this football team, maybe not even past this week, but certainly not ahead of Tuesday's November 1st trade deadline. I think that there's probably a 35, 40, maybe even close to a 50% chance that the return that they get for Brandon Cooks is a sixth round draft pick.
Yeah, look, I think that now knowing what we know now, we didn't know then when we started the discussion, I think that is the realistic end of the line here is going to be something that is going to be very disappointing to Texans fans that don't know and don't understand dead cap and all the different things that go into this. And they're going to think that, hey, you know, this guy, if he was close to a wide receiver one, why isn't it a second? Why isn't it at worst a third? And why are they settling for whatever they end up settling for if they do indeed trade him? And it's because of the details. It's because of the things that aren't right there front and center when you talk about how simple it is. Oh, team A traded him to there and got this in return. Everybody goes, that's terrible. They got screwed. They got run over. But when you start factoring in the financials, it makes sense. It's what has to be done. And from a Texans perspective, he's not doing you any favors right now. He's not helping you. Like you said, he's quit on you in so many ways. And at first, at the start of the year, he was going to be the veteran wide receiver that was going to be the stabilizing force that helped Davis Mills. He's not helping Davis Mills. He's not helping himself. And so it's best for both parties, like they've done in other situations with other guys that were unhappy and made it known, they've moved on.
Yeah.
They should move on from him, too.
I also don't hate the idea of making Nico Collins your number one receiver for the final eight games, to see how much help you truly need at that position. I've liked what I've seen more from Nico Collins recently, too. Like he looks like he is capable of being a top three receiver on an NFL team.
He can start on an NFL team. Yeah. He can high point a football. He's big. He's strong. He's physical. And I think he knows how to position his body and use his hands. It's just a matter of route running and being able to create some kind of separation between defensive backs. But I don't think that, because of his age and how recently he came into the NFL, that it's not something that he can't develop even further as he gets, deeper
sure.
in his career.
I'm not going to ever call him a number one receiver. I would even stop short of saying that he's like a good number two. But he's not like a slot guy, so he's not what you would consider your number three. Like John Metchie is going to be the
right
slot guy next year if everything goes well, hopefully that it does. But Nico Collins belongs in an NFL wide receiver room. And I do think I do think, I don't want to say highly. What's like mid-highly? Like almost highly of Nico Collins? Like
you think okay of Nico Collins?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
You think enough of Nico Collins to pencil him into your future with the Houston Texans?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to see how, like, I want to see if he can increase that confidence I have in Nico Collins. Like, do I think by the end of the season, if he plays really well, that he could be a solid number two receiver for a playoff caliber team? I want to see that. So trading Brandon Cooks would be good from that sense, because now he's your alpha. He's your number one receiver. I would trade Brandon Cooks for a 6th-round draft pick. I can't believe I'm saying that. I really can't. But if I get a 6th-round draft pick, that's the best offer that is on the table. I'm not saying no to that if I'm Nick Caserio.
I'm not either, but in the press conference following the trade, I need someone to ask Nick Caserio why he signed him to an extension.
Absolutely. This is a loss
that
before the trade
come up.
It's a loss before the trade's even been made.
It is. It has set you back. Of all the ways that you've kind of tried to speed up the rebuild, from a financial perspective, that move in itself set you back financially. And not that you were going to spend all of it, or that, you know, you needed all of it to get a said player or two that you had your eye on. But that is not a helpful move for this franchise.
Here's a few of these. See, this is kind of like pie in the sky. Don't really know what the NFL market is like. 0892 for Brandon Cooks. Like, we're asking you the question, what is the least you would take for Brandon Cooks? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. 0892 for Brandon Cooks, 1st and 4th.
Get out of here.
With incentives based on snap count to move to a third if he plays 60% or more. Let me tell you this right now. If Nick Caserio got a call from anybody in the NFL, Green Bay, L.A., Kansas, whoever needs a receiver, and they offer, just get rid of the first. Yep. If they offered Nick Caserio right now a 4th with the condition that if he plays 60% or more of the snaps and it turns into a 3rd, Nick Caserio could not say yes fast enough.
There are teams who paid less than that to go get their starting quarterback this offseason.
Yeah, it's just... It's not, I mean, that's not even in the realm of possibilities.
And then 0830, which is probably more realistic if we're being honest, 7th rounder, get him out, can find 10 guys that will put in more effort.
Let me tell you something, by the way. The first one, right before the first one you read, the one thing that you said previously that factors into this conversation, because Caserio does need to take the blame for this, he will blame Jack Easterby. The extension will be blamed on Jack Easterby.
Look, if I'm Caserio, I'm blaming Jack Easterby.
There's no question.
But I'm not buying that BS. No. I'm not buying it.
But if you're the media, you shouldn't buy it, and you should press harder and have a follow-up question. But I guarantee you the first thing out of his mouth is going to be, that's something that we were working with Jack on, that, you know, you pull a Bill O'Brien, you drop a Jack in there, and hope that everybody goes away.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about that the other day. Not only, don't even stop with the Brandon Cooks thing, put the David Culley thing on him, too. If you want to throw in the last coaching carousel, throw that onto Jack Easterby, too. Let him carry some baggage out the door on his way out. Jasper asked a good question, because, look, we're talking about the least that you would take for Brandon Cooks. Somebody just said a 7th. I've talked myself down to a 6th. Whenever we had the pre-show meeting, what was I at? 5th, I think?
You said you wouldn't take a 5th.
Yeah. I wouldn't take a 5th. Right. Wow. So that, like,
and
in 2 hours.
A second or a and we started the conversation on Tuesday with a 2nd or a 3rd.
Right. We thought 2nd was pie in the sky.
We didn't know how deep the financials went.
Honestly, when I thought of the question originally, I was surprised that your guys' answer wasn't, like, I thought you would just give them away for free.
Well, I don't like giving away good players for free.
Yeah.
And Brandon Cooks has skill.
But here's the thing.
For
the
worst
case
scenario,
he's not doing you any good on the field. He's not doing you any good now off the field.
Right. See, I looked at it like...
It's addition by subtraction again.
I looked at it like being, you know, embrace the suck fans. You have a 29-year-old who doesn't want to be here.
Uh-huh.
You may think he's worth more than that, but I really thought you guys would say, you know what? He doesn't want to be here, 29-year-old wide receiver. I'm not going to make him be here. Whatever we can take... That's the lowest I'll get.
I just hate, like, and I understand that. I really do. I just hate the idea of buying high and selling low. Like, it's the exact opposite of how you should conduct business as a general manager in any sport. It's how dudes conduct business on Wall Street, right? One of the worst things that you can do to try to get the most bang out of your buck is buy low and sell high. And this is exactly what Nick Caserio did, who's a very financial, money-savvy, market type of dude.
See,
he bought whenever Brandon Cooks was high, and now he's going to be selling very, very low.
You know what's worse than buying high and selling low? Waiting until low becomes high again, and just watching it go lower and lower and lower.
But I mean, how low can you go? We're talking about a 6th-round draft pick. You can't go much lower than that. That's basically cutting him.
You could go low enough that you're cutting him. It's not out of the question. He's
sure.
He's at the age where teams start to get very hesitant about wide receivers. And he's got a few more years on the deal. I get your point.
Yeah.
You can't go that much lower. But I wouldn't rule out that you could still go a little lower.
I think you could go a little bit lower, sure. But I think that there's the... there's not much lower. Like, you're already almost close to rock bottom. But Jasper asked this good point here, because we're talking low, we're talking rock bottom. You're entertaining the idea of, like, if you don't have a trade suitor by November 1st, that you would think about even cutting Brandon Cooks. Jasper says, so if all they get is a sixth, why not keep him and tell him to suck it up? If he holds out, then we don't have to pay him, right?
He doesn't want to be there.
I don't think you're really adding anything, though. Like, is Philip Dorsett going to add anything to this football team? No, I don't think so. I think that's a step down.
No, but I'm saying addition by subtraction by getting him out of your locker room. Don't let him be a distraction. Don't let him be a detriment to Davis Mills if he can't be someone that helps him. Mm-hmm. And just try and move on from a guy that doesn't want to be there to and give guys an opportunity who either are playing for their careers or playing for a chance to be there on Sundays.
I just can't give you the addition. I think it's just subtraction. Like, I don't think that you're really adding anything. Like, if you look at Christian Wood, like the addition for like addition by subtraction there. Well, you got Jabari Smith. You opened up minutes for dudes who can play. Like, Brandon Cooks being subtracted from this team means that Philip Dorsett plays a lot, that Tyrone Johnson maybe gets a chance, this dude that they just picked up from the Raiders practice squad. They cut Tyler Johnson about it. Maybe now he gets some snaps. I think it's just subtraction.
Well,
I think
they cut Tyler Johnson yesterday, and they signed
Tyrone Johnson.
Tyrone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they got rid of Tyler Johnson. But I think Jasper, that point by Jasper is like a solid point, because I am a believer of don't sell low. Like, buy low, sell high. Nick Caserio's doing the opposite here with Brandon Cooks, which I think is fair to look at Nick Caserio as a failure when it comes to the decision of Brandon Cooks. I do think that it comes to a certain point where you have to think about keeping Brandon Cooks. Like, I don't
think
he really adds
anything
to this team. Well,
finances for next year is the biggest issue.
Yeah.
You know, you are not worrying about the rest of the finances for the rest of this season to get you through 2022. You don't want something that sets you back before you even start 2023. I think that's the biggest factor.
And it's a sunk cost at this point. Like, you're not subtracting the dead cap. Like, I get the addition by subtraction. The problem is that you're not subtracting the dead cap.
You can get rid of the player, but if you can't get rid of the contract, that hurts.
The cap figure, like, it'd be cheaper to keep him. It would be cheaper for him to be on this team next year by $8 million. So, I mean, Jasper's question's a sound one. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. In case we missed it, all the stories we've wanted to get to this week, but time went against us. We just haven't had a chance to. But in case we missed it, with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5 is next.